KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Whiskey Dixie and the Big Wet Country, playing now through October 13th at the Imago Theater in Portland. Whiskey Dixie and the Big Wet Country is a raunchy outlaw country musical about a sexually frustrated cowgirl on a tragic comic ride from hell who will do whatever it takes to get off. Written by local award-winning and Grammy-nominated songwriter Amanda Richards and directed by Sarah Pope, this off-color comedy offers a feminist perspective into a world of dive bars, drunks, and country music. Again, that's Whiskey Dixie and the Big Wet Country, playing now through October 13th at Imago Theater, 17 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Warning, the following message is only for listeners who contributed during KBOO's Fall Membership Drive. If you did not contribute to KBOO's Fall Membership Drive, please turn off your radio now.
On behalf of the entire KBOO community, we'd like to offer our deepest and sincerest thanks for your contribution to KBOO's Fall Membership Drive. Your support makes KBOO possible. Thank you.
If you didn't contribute during KBOO's Fall Membership Drive, you may now turn your radio back on.
It's not too late. Go to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution right now.
Then the next time this spot plays, you'll be able to listen.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, and next up we have Hedda with Preference.
Welcome, dear listeners. This is Preference. I'm your host, Hedda. I'm very excited to be here. Before we get started, I guess we'll get started with an announcement of mine. I am an organizer for Thrill the World Portland. It is the local outpost of a worldwide thriller dance. This is our 12th year doing it. We get a good crowd, close to 200 people a year, and we'd love to have you join us. The version of Thriller we use actually is extended to fill the full song, so it's some work to learn, and we're here to help you. We have practices beginning Friday this week, and you can pop in. All of our practices are roughly the same. We try to teach you the full dance in a bit less than 2 hours, give you a chance to work through it. This year, it is a benefit for KBOO Community Radio. So thanks to everyone who's going to participate. You can look for Thrill the World Portland online, either on the Blue site. There's also a blog, a WordPress, and I don't know what it's called. But if you Bing Thrill the World Portland, you will find it. And we dance on Saturday, October 27th, I think it is. It's the last Saturday in October in a public place with all of your friends and enemies and families in attendance to watch. We have on the telephone joining us today, Cabell Gathman. Cabell, can you hear?
Yes, I can.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Do you want to introduce yourself first before we dig into some of the work you do?
Sure. So my name is Cabell Gathman. Cabell rhymes with Scrabble, I always tell people. I am a cisgender bisexual woman. I hold a PhD in sociology from the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And I now teach part-time in the Gender and Women's Studies Department. I teach some courses on LGBTQ plus issues. And I also teach general sociology courses as well as some gender courses at Edgewood College, also in Madison, Wisconsin. Hmm. And I'm an organizer with LGBT Books to Prisoners, which is, as far as we know, the only active grassroots organization providing books to incarcerated LGBTQ plus folks specifically in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much. Let's talk about LGBT Books to Prisoners and the work that you and the other volunteers are doing. How long have you...
Sure.
How long has the organization been engaged in this?
So the organization has been around now for more than 10 years. It started as an offshoot of the Wisconsin Books to Prisoners project. So the former owner of Rainbow Cooperative here in Madison, which was a cooperative bookstore, was one of the organizers for Wisconsin Books to Prisoners, and they were seeing a lot of requests coming in from LGBTQ plus folks specifically. And so for a while, I know Dennis kind of ran the organization out of his apartment with a little bit of help from other folks. And then when he became ill, some other people who had become involved with the project got it into the basement of Rainbow and brought on some additional organizers so that the project could continue, basically. And so they were in, we were in the basement of Rainbow Books until unfortunately they closed a couple of years ago here in Madison. I think they didn't want to carry textbooks, you know, the issues with class in the textbook market, and it's hard to keep going in a university town. But so we are now actually based out of the Social Justice Center here in Madison. So we are one of the organizations that rents some space in what they call their incubator. And so we've been there for about 2 years now. And we are we take requests from LGBTQ plus folks who are incarcerated. We work directly with them. Part of the project is that we do not work with prisons. We don't collaborate with the prison industrial complex. We work directly with the incarcerated folks to try and give them the books that they tell us they need.
Wonderful. Thanks, Cabell. I didn't mention this when we were talking on the phone the other day, but I used to volunteer at Rainbow Books 20 years ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
Can we divert for just a second, and can you tell
sure.
us what the Social Justice Center is?
So the Social Justice Center is kind of a collection of different organizations that work in Madison. There are some services for homeless people that are based out of the Social Justice Center, the Tenant Resource Center here in Madison, which I, as a graduate student, made use of a couple of times. Mm-hmm. They're also based out of the Social Justice Center. So it's really, you know, it's a space that is intended to bring together grassroots organizations that might not be able to provide space on their own, but a variety of organizations that are really focused on providing social justice, on rectifying inequality.
Wonderful. Thanks for that. So, Books to Prisoners. There's a slew of challenges, obviously, in reaching prisoners. One of the things you and I talked about and that I've been tracking in the news as closely as I can is Pennsylvania's decision in their state prisons, as I understand it, where they're not allowing donated books, books at
Correct.
All.
Mm-hmm.
Instead,
Instead, in Pennsylvania, what they're trying to do is require all incarcerated folks to order from a single central vendor. And if this sounds familiar, it's because this is something that a few states have been trying in the past couple of years. And I do want to start out by saying that we are hopeful that public pressure could get them to back down on this, because that has actually been the case in other states previously. The Pennsylvania Department of Corrections has determined that they will only allow incarcerated folks to order books from this single vendor. They must be e-books. And in order to read those books, people will actually need to also have a proprietary tablet that costs just under $150. Mm. And of course, that is an incredible amount of money for someone who is incarcerated. If folks are familiar, you know, when people do have any kind of paid employment inside prisons, they are not protected by minimum wage laws. You know, folks fighting wildfires in California are being paid about $2 a day for that labor, and that's not atypical. And when LGBTQ plus people are incarcerated, they in particular tend to have less support from friends and family on the outside. They may be estranged from family. They may have been rejected. The people who they do know also, as is common for anyone who is incarcerated, people tend to have fewer resources in the first place. That's how people end up inside prisons. And so we have a bunch of people who have very few resources being told that to have access to any books at all, they have to pay for this tablet and then pay some as yet unspecified price for ebooks. But we do know that, you know, charges on these tablets would be something like $1.20 for a song. We don't know what they would be for ebooks, but we also don't even know how many LGBTQ plus titles would even be available through the central vendor, because that was another concern with other states that have proposed similar programs, is that the catalog that's available is really very, very thin, and particularly on topics that prisons often do their best to keep out of the prison entirely, like LGBTQ plus issues.
And by keep out of the prisons, you mean, what do you mean there?
Well, so, you know, of course, when we send books to people, they tell us what they want, mm-hmm. And we rely on donations. So what we're able to send to folks varies day to day. There are certain, you know, if you go to our website, which is actually lgbtbookstoprisoners.org, we have some wish lists there. So folks sometimes order off of our wish lists. And so we know there are certain high demand books, things like, you know, Janet Mock's work, as a trans woman of color. We serve a lot of people, who want to hear her story. We serve a lot of trans women. And we have some other sort of high demand books, but we also get a lot of donated used books. We depend on incarcerated folks not just to tell us what they want, but what they're allowed to receive. So prisons have varied requirements. In the state of Wisconsin, in state prisons here, people can only receive new soft cover books. They can't have used, they can't have hardcover. In most federal facilities tend to allow both hardcover and used, but various other institutions, it can vary by state, it can vary institution to institution, it can depend on whether somebody is in solitary confinement. And ultimately, it really depends on the whims of the people in power at the institution. So if the warden decides that they don't want something in the prison, we're not going to have a lot of luck getting it in. And so we do sometimes get letters from people. We got a letter just recently from someone telling us, you know, don't try to send me any gay books because I won't get them. They just won't come through. It's not like there's an official rule, but they won't let me have them. And that, unfortunately, is not uncommon.
Spanish language books, this is something that's pretty important.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we definitely, we get letters from folks who speak Spanish, whose primary language is Spanish sometimes. We also get, you know, just recently I got a request from someone who was talking in his letter about how he has family in Puerto Rico and he feels bad that he doesn't speak Spanish. And so he was requesting language learning materials, and those are really popular, Spanish, but also really just an array of languages that folks want to work on learning those skills while they're incarcerated. But we do definitely hear from a number of people who do speak Spanish as a primary language.
Yeah. And I think you told me no New Age stuff. What does that mean? What is that?
Well, this has only happened to us a few times with, for some reason, prisons in Florida. And I'll preface this also by saying that New Age stuff is in high demand. So books on witchcraft, books on tarot, astrology, meditation, like we have it sort of all jumbled together in a single section, but we get lots of requests for that kind of thing. And so that's always something we appreciate receiving. But I have handled multiple returned packages from prisons in Florida where they have literally returned books on Wicca or witchcraft because they don't want the incarcerated folks to have them. And, you know, that seems like a really clear violation of freedom of religion, but this is what they have stated in the returned packages more than once, is that we will not allow folks to receive books about Wicca.
But we don't. But there's no sort of official stance or statement or explanation of what
that's
about.
You know, I'm trying to remember because I remember there was an official letter. Sometimes you just get a return package and it's kind of, you know, you're trying to divine what happened, right? Frequently we get packages back where there's an official slip. Something has been checked off, like no composition books, for instance. So I just got a package that they returned the entire thing because they don't allow blank composition books. And that was checked off in like a form that they put in to return. I know with the Florida packages that I was looking at some kind of official letter. I don't think it was a form, but I think it was insofar as it was an official communication from the prison. They were specifically identifying the books about Wicca as the reason that they were returning the package.
Well, at least for me, that's unexpected.
I wasn't, you know, like, we're so used to the queer content being what a lot of prison officials object to. But, you know, and nudity, of course. Like, there are all kinds of restrictions and very, like, if you look in the notes in our database, it'll be like, you know, nudity only if educational, genitals cannot be visible, like there should be no visible, like, happy trail. You know, the people will sometimes get very specific with us, which we appreciate, you know, explaining to us, you know, that butts are okay, but no frontal nudity, that kind of thing. But yeah, I was surprised the first time that we got one of those Wicca books back too.
You have, the organization has wish lists online. Mm-hmm. I'm checking.
We do.
Yeah.
Well, so as I said, they're on our website. So that's lgbtbookstoprisoners.org. And if you go to our website, we have links in the sidebar. And if you're local to Madison, Wisconsin, we're always happy. I realize on this particular program, there aren't going to be a lot of folks. But we have our volunteer schedule up there. But also we do receive donations from people all over the country, which we really appreciate. We just got, you know, a package of a gay romance from an author donating some of his stock, which was really nice this past week. And we do, you know, and people will sometimes even, you know, people will go around here to use book sales and bring us in some used stuff that we can send, as I said, to some prisons will allow used books. So we have the wish list with a lot of the high demand items. Something else that people might not necessarily think about that is high demand, so we would definitely appreciate more kind of books like this. We, as I said, we serve a lot of trans women. We serve way more transgender women who are almost always housed in male institutions. You know, this is something a few years ago I realized with my students in my intro LGBTQ plus course. My students were watching Orange is the New Black, and they were really shocked when I told them that essentially trans women don't go to women's prisons. You know, and I mean, part of the issue is that if you could afford to medically transition or even change your documents in such a way that the prison industrial complex would recognize it, then you could afford not to go to prison. But so we serve a lot of transgender women in male institutions, and a lot of them want to read books about trans experience, but they also just want to read books about, like, sort of traditional feminine interests that maybe they haven't been allowed to explore. So we often get to send out books like nail art, fashion, hair, that a lot of these trans women in prison are really excited. Like, that's something that really lets somebody take their mind away for a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that they get to actually look at fun pictures of makeup and nails and think about how they could use those things as part of their gender expression at some point when they get out. So that's something that people don't always think about when we talk about, like, what kind of books are in high demand for incarcerated LGBTQ plus folks. But we have stuff like that. We have art books. People love books on how to draw. Legal self-help books, of course, are very popular, but so are things like Sudoku, because, of course, when you're incarcerated, you just have these big blocks of time when you don't have very much interesting to do. So we get a lot of requests for, like, games and puzzle books, too, and those show up on our wish list.
Let's talk about Black and Pink.
Sure, yeah. Black and Pink is a pen pal organization. So, and we had talked before about how, we had to go down when the project first started. We were sending a maximum of 3 packages per year. And as word got around, we had to make some capacity decisions because we have limited volunteer labor. And so the first thing that the project ended up doing, we serve every state with prisons in the U.S. except for Texas. And the reason for that is that Texas has so many prisons, and there are a number of Texas-specific projects that when we had to make a decision about how to limit our service so that we could keep going, the decision was made, we'll eliminate Texas. That's a hard and fast rule that people can easily tell each other, right? It's easy to communicate, this project doesn't serve Texas. And that word gets around. We don't get very many letters from Texas now because people know that. And there are quite a few projects that are Texas specific, so we didn't feel like we were leaving as big a hole. But then another thing that happened was that we had to cut down couple of years after that, we had to cut down from 3 packages per year to 2 packages per year for each individual. And that's really too bad. One of the things that we, of course, like to hear from people when they write back to us and tell us what they thought of the books that they received, but they really value the notes that our volunteers include in the package. So we can't include, like, a long letter. We can only basically include a note as long as we can fit on the back of one of our order forms, because that's sort of the requirements of media mail, and these are supposed to be packages of books being shipped in. But we do write notes on the back of the new order form that they're getting. And consistently, we hear from people that the note was the most important or one of the most important things about the package. I mentioned before, a lot of people have been rejected by family. They may have lost connection with people who they knew outside of prison. And that's really terrible to be alone. Right, to be somewhere alone and not have contact with people who care about you, who are just talking to you like a human being, which is something that our prison system works really hard to take away from people. And so just getting notes from the volunteers is something that means a lot to people, but it's not, as I said, it's not a long letter, and now we're down to 2 packages a year. So Black and Pink is a pen pal organization focused specifically on incarcerated LGBTQ plus folks. So if you go to blackandpink.org, you can actually sign up to be a pen pal and write letters to one of the people who has signed up to be on their list. And that's really important. That human connection makes a huge difference for folks' mental health. But really, just receiving regular mail makes a real difference in folks' physical safety, too. When you get mail in prison, that's a signal to everybody there that somebody knows who you are, somebody cares what happens to you, who is outside the prison. And that's important. Prisons are dangerous places, and just knowing that there's somebody who's going to notice if something happens to you, that's something that helps provide people a little more safety.
Cabell, how we're talking about LGBT books to prisoners with Cabell Gathman. Cabell, how closely are you and the other volunteers able to match requests with the kinds of books you can make available to them?
Sure, good question. We have to limit gay fiction, for instance, to one per package because we get so many requests for that. We are in particular need of books on bisexuality. Mm-hmm. That we do hear from a lot of folks who identify as bi, and our bi section is always one or two books on the shelf, if that, because we just don't get very many of them. And, you know, I mentioned things like drawing books and Sudoku, you know, those go out as fast as we get them, basically. On our order form, we ask people to check off genres, and people will frequently write in and ask for particular authors. And what I tend to do, and I think what most volunteers tend to do, is, you know, we can at least hop on Google and see who is similar to this author, right? Like, if this person is requesting book A that we don't have, what kind of book is this, and do we have something similar? You know, one thing that I have enjoyed doing, like, is sort of matching people, because I read fairly broadly in, like, science fiction and fantasy, when people have requests in that genre, then I feel like I have a little bit of a, I have some background to maybe make some recommendations. And we tell them that, you know, I tell them that in the note. I say, you can always request a specific thing, but it's, we rely on donations, so we don't order books specifically, but we're always, you know, we're always happy to try to find something that's close to what you're asking for. And you never know, like, sometimes it's pretty amazing the sort of match, the serendipitous matches that might turn up in our donated books when people have a particular request. We had a request for a King James Bible dictionary. Mm-hmm. And we found one. It was in the dictionary. It was in the dictionary reference section right there. I thought that was pretty cool.
Just a semi-tangent, a little bit of a tangent. Do you have queer sci-fi and fantasy writers that you personally are passionate about?
Oh, gosh. You know, this is, that's a big question. I am, and in particular, recently, like, I've been really interested in, like, more media fandom and, like, comic representation. And that should say, actually, you know, we do get a lot of requests for graphic novels and mm-hmm. comics, too. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that's pretty cool. Some of the representation in comics is something that I was a huge X-Men nerd in the 90s. I have half a lecture on the legacy virus and the AIDS crisis. Fellow X-Men nerds, I like it when we can match people up with some of the comics and graphic novels. You know, this is like when I go into the music store and I'm like, what do I like? What bands have I listened to ever? We do actually, I was going to say, we have actually a small little LGBTQ fantasy sci-fi section because we actually get a fair amount of donated work that sort of overlaps sometimes between erotica and romance and science fiction that is like queer romance science fiction. Mm-hmm. You know, what have I been reading lately? I've been reading more young adult stuff because that's what I teach. So then it's like, you know, books like Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe, mm-hmm. Which is just a fantastic young adult novel about Mexican-American boys. So that's where, Pantomime by Laura Lamb. Okay. That's one that I've used, and I think it went back into e-print, but it was a trilogy with an intersex protagonist who also seems to have some kind of plurisexual identity, and it's sort of a, like, it's kind of a fantasy, possibly like a, you know, far future post cataclysm whatever type fantasy. I really like that one because, you know, you don't see a lot of representation of intersex characters, and I think that the way that the protagonist in that one is treated is like there's some awareness of the potential for medical trauma, although the protagonist gets away from that, manages to escape that experience. So I appreciate that there's sort of that sense that this is a danger that the protagonist is subjected to, but also that in this fantasy they're able to escape that. So that's one that I really, and that's, Pantomime is the first in a trilogy about this character, Micah Gray, and that's by Laura Lamb. I also really enjoy some of Melinda Lowe's stuff. She's done some sort of fairy tale adaptations with queer female characters.
My dream interview is with Samuel Delaney. That's the author I'm probably, whose work I'm probably most passionate. Unfortunately, Mr. Delaney does not do live interviews. Ever.
Oh.
Only by writing. And a fair amount of published interviews with him are actually conducted by him using a different name, like a character that he has created to conduct these interviews with himself.
Oh, interesting. My dissertation research was on self-presentation, so that's really fascinating.
So the website LGBT Books to Prisoners, we can find information about the organization's mission statement, how folks can donate cash for books. Find links to wish lists.
Yes, you can find links to some of our wish lists, and we have some through Room of One's Own, which is the bookstore I should mention. Room of One's Own bookstore here in Madison is a feminist-owned bookstore, and they do a ton of events in the feminist and queer communities here, and they have very generously partnered with us since Rainbow is no more. And so we have a wish list through them as well. So if people want to support our local bookstore that is our the reason we're able to send books, because you do have to be an approved vendor, which means you have to be sending under the auspices of a bookstore. So we do have a wish list through them on our site. And I should also just mention our Twitter, which is, our handle is just LGBTBTP, so LGBT Books to Prisoners, but it's just BTP. And if you check out our Twitter, we have tweeted, I know, links to a petition, for instance, to protest the policy in Pennsylvania to try and get them to change that policy. So we do put like calls to action on our Twitter, and we also have a Facebook page.
You said books have to go out through a bookstore?
Yes.
Go ahead.
This is why it's really so frustrating to have a state like Pennsylvania say, we can't accept books anymore because we have security concerns. They can only be ebooks from this single vendor that just happens to make a bunch of money for people who have powerful interests, right? Is that it's already not possible for an individual to just be sending books in willy-nilly. You have to be on an approved vendor's list in order to send packages of books in to folks within the prisons. And so there are, you know, this is something that obviously affects us. There are a number of other Books to Prisoners programs. And I think we had talked a little bit about how Pennsylvania has a lot of people in prison. Mm-hmm. They're actually number 5 in the country for the total like prison population. So there are only 4 other states that have more incarcerated people than Pennsylvania. And they're saying, you know, all of a sudden these approved people who've been sending books for up to 30 years are no longer allowed to do that. But yeah, you do have to have an approved vendor. And you can't send books, typically you cannot send books from Amazon. So, I mean, of course, when people think of buying books online, they often think of Amazon. And if you have limited resources, people often look to Amazon for cheaper prices on books. The politics of that aside, you actually can't send books from Amazon into prisons because they will also only take USPS, and Amazon delivers through UPS. So you actually can't order books for people that way. It's already very limited who's allowed to send in books and how.
So I don't have much in the way of money right now, but I do have books, and I found at least a few books in mm-hmm. my home that are on Books to Prisoners wish lists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I just send them direct to LGBT Books to Prisoners at the Social Justice Center?
Yes, you definitely can. We get packages of books from people periodically. And like I said, you know, we have some locals who go to the library book sales and hit up the, you know, $1 or $2 a bag paperback portion of the sale for us all the time. So we definitely appreciate anything in those kind of high demand areas, right? I mean, obviously, any books that are LGBTQ plus related specifically, but also things like graphic novels, books on drawing, books on legal, like sort of legal self-help books, those kind of beauty books I was talking about before, games and puzzles, like books in all of those categories, you know, if they're used, we can definitely still find people who can take them and who will be really happy to have them.
Wonderful. You and I talked, Cabell, briefly about the difference for folks being in state mm-hmm. facilities and in being in federal facilities.
Yeah. So the majority of people who are incarcerated in the U.S. are in state prisons and local and county jails. And in fact, you know, as state prison, in cases where state prisons have been overcrowded, sometimes people have been transferred into local and county jails. The inequality in incarceration, in particular, in rural areas, you see high rates of incarceration in those local and county jails, and we do sometimes get requests from them. It's just that most of the time, people are not in for long enough to send a request to us and then get books back. So we primarily are serving people in state prisons, although we also do serve federal prisons. It's just that there are a lot more people who are in state prisons. And so federal prisons, as I mentioned before, you can typically send both used and hardcover, whereas state institutions are usually more restrictive. And state institutions are also much more likely to be private. So when the Obama administration was like pushing some things about reducing privatization of prisons, they were really only talking about federal prisons, mm-hmm. and that's like a very small proportion of the total number of incarcerated folks in the U.S. to begin with. So the private prisons are primarily state prisons. And so we see, and this is, you know, putting people in these prisons is a business, and there are beds that states pay to fill. So in some cases, people are moved out of state entirely. And obviously this cuts them off from their community. People can't visit in person. They have a lot less support. But even within states, it's pretty common for people to be incarcerated, you know, more than 100 miles from their home. And so, again, it is very difficult, even if you do have connections outside, you have loved ones who want to see you, it can be very difficult for them to get to you.
Mm-hmm. A reminder, we're talking about LGBT Books to Prisoners, an organization that serves folks across the country, wherever possible, with books. Do you have any last thoughts, Cabell, about the work that the organization is doing, or what you'd like to see happen, or what you hope folks can do to contribute?
You know, like I said, I really hope that people do what they can to protest this decision in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Another piece of this is that not only will folks be limited to ebooks on this very expensive tablet from a single vendor for reading materials that they can purchase, but also the Pennsylvania is stating that people will no longer be able to receive original mail. I was reading up on this policy. What they're actually proposing to do is all mail sent to people in prisons will be scanned and printed. So people will be presented with a printed copy of everything that is mailed to them. They will never get the original. And I have small children, and I just ask you to imagine that you are incarcerated and you are already trapped in the system that is set up to dehumanize you. And maybe you do have loved ones who are sending you letters, and you are literally not allowed to touch the same paper that they touch. That if you have a child make you a drawing, you don't get to actually see the drawing that they made. Instead, the prison system gives you a copy and destroys the original. I think that that is just incredibly dehumanizing. And it's another piece of this policy. But like I said, we've seen really good effects from big public protests of similar policies in other states. So if people can really get involved and make, let other people know that this is happening and make it clear that it's unacceptable, mm-hmm. That you can't take away books and information and knowledge from people in prisons, I think that we can actually change this. And I think, the other thing to keep in mind, too, we are an abolitionist organization. We push for ending prisons, that prisons have just grown like a cancer since 1980 in the United States. And, the number mm-hmm. of people who are incarcerated astronomically higher than it was prior to the racist war on drugs that Reagan began in the 80s. Following on some policies of the Nixon administration, right, that we can change things. I mean, I think people look at this and think, well, but this is just how it is, but it doesn't have to be. And it's, it's within my lifetime that this has happened. So I think maybe within my lifetime we can turn it back.
That would be wonderful. Cabell, thanks so much for joining us to talk about LGBT books to prisoners. I hope folks will join me in contributing to help get books in the folks' hands.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
We're grateful. We're going to hear a little bit of Allison Moyet from her record last year. This track is called Other.
I don't know precisely which day colored me other. Perchance it may have been a slow bleed. So I cut out whichever shape I need. I don't sue for rescue. I'm as free as I have ever been. Don't want another rock to hang about my neck. You see bejeweled, I see bedecked in dead stars. And nothing touching me, nothing touching me. For open windows, I call the birds that do not come. You beak and dead-eyed welcome. Bones bleach of the city, and when I'm done, I'm done, I'm done. Keep eternal for your worry. I don't want to look upon another word. This heart so lightly thrown, I say disarm, I hear disown. It sounds familiar. I don't want another rock to hang about my neck. You see bejeweled, I see bedecked in dead stars. I don't want to look upon another word this dear so lightly spent, and what says here means came and went. It sounds familiar. Nothing's touching me. Nothing's touching me.
Alison Moyet there. I want to thank Cabell Gathman for joining us from LGBT Books to Prisoners for the first part of the show. Also to Somia for making this show possible. She's working in the booth right now. We have Robert Gluck on the phone. Robert, can you hear us?
I can.
Wonderful. Hello. Hi there. You're going to be in town this Saturday for a reading. Can you before we talk about the reading or your work, can you just give us an intro? Tell us who you are.
I'm coming up from San Francisco, where I've lived off and on for many years. I'm part of a group of writers called a literary school from the 70s and 80s called New Narrative. And I suppose I will be purveying some of my new narrative wares in Portland.
Wonderful.
Is that enough?
Yeah, I think it's a good start to work from. I want to. Your coming to town gave me an opportunity to, an incentive to read Marjorie Kemp again. Here's a part of a paragraph that really stood out to me. Marjorie held a mistaken belief in the value of her experience, a tradition I can claim as my own links me to her, of farce and uncertainty, the broad comedy of terror, the fable a community of doubt tells itself. Can you speak to what Marjorie's falsification to herself is, and perhaps how that exploring that question for yourself comes through in your writing.
Okay. Marjorie was a person in history, and she wrote what is considered to be the first autobiography in English. So, of course, that's interesting to me since I'm primarily an autobiographer. And she wanted to be a saint, and she described herself as though she were a saint, but she was working with the wrong materials. And she was really a modern person, but didn't understand that. And her goal orientation, that is, you can't really decide you want to decide to be a saint. That's something that comes from above, if it's going to come at all. And so her goal orientation sort of shows her up her piety at every point. But for me, the interesting thing is that she was really between two different paradigms. She was between a medieval and a modern paradigm. And so she couldn't understand her own experience. And I think that we're between paradigms now, and that is a problem, a difficulty of understanding the meaning of one's experience. I think we're pretty uncertain about what the value of our experience is and what it adds up to and what death means and what sex means, and we're changing a lot now, and just caught up in something that will not be comprehensible for some time. So I think in that way, I'm relating to Marjorie in that way.
You wrote about, and this was a few decades ago, about how sexuality is almost a refuge for queer folks. It was and probably is one of the few areas that are left to queer people to own, to inhabit, and so mm-hmm. that it there becomes this perhaps sense of imbalance in who we are and how we approach the world.
Well, I don't know about the imbalance. A writer who is very important to me was Georges Bataille, a French writer for whom sexuality was also central. At a certain point in life, a gay, like a sex club, could equal to the community what a church did to a Christian community. That is, a place to find community and to experience something that takes you out of yourself and maybe even gives you a sense of what larger truths might be, or the void. In his view, the community, at the center of a community, there's a emptiness. That's what the community can give you, is to show you something beyond yourself, or some place where you don't even exist. And well, I'm not sure I would ever say somebody was having a preoccupation with sexuality and imbalance. I actually don't think that's true. But hold on a second. Sex is a language, and sort of everything is spoken inside of it. And so you have sex in order to know yourself and know who you are. When I started having sex as a gay man, I understood what I was in a way that I couldn't before. And it's a kind of a middle distance, you would say, in writing, where you're recognizing who you are. You're recognizing the substance of your personality in your life. But then it's also a way to lose oneself, to forget about oneself, and to abandon the kind of climb out of the box of psychology mm-hmm. and turn into just pure meat. And or something other, something outside of oneself, or so far inside that it's the same thing. Does that seem clear to you?
Yeah, I think that it does. Yeah. And it brings me to another question. But first, I want to mention that you're reading with other folks this Saturday, beginning at 7 p.m. This is at Ford Food and Drink. Not too far, almost down the street from here, essentially 11th and Division, and it's part of the Switch Reading Series. So great, great folks doing great work and bringing in great writers. One of the things I try to do on Preference is, I guess, queer the sort of the history of gay experience and gay community mm-hmm. and gay organizing, mm-hmm. how queer folks have developed community. And I think that story, that broad set of stories is potentially in danger of collapsing into one single narrative about mm-hmm. how queer...
Yes, all the dismal... The priorities of gay politics over the last 10 years. Is that what you're speaking of?
Well, I think there's a reaction to that that's fronting Stonewall. And it's mm-hmm. my understanding that on the West Coast, for example, Stonewall wasn't the kind of key trigger for community experience and community formation. That was a process that was already underway. For, Christine.
We had our riot,
mm-hmm.
But there was perhaps a more intense backstory, say. There was a lot of Marxism here, for example, and the people who were doing the first organizing learned how to organize in leftist circles. Just to say, it's a sort of a history that people don't seem to acknowledge anymore, and they think that sort of just Stonewall just began it all. But there was a decade of organizing, and people were fellow travelers of either in the party or fellow travelers of communist organizations or socialist organizations.
Interesting. Christina Hanhart writes about definitely by the mid-60s in San Francisco, there was organizing against police violence against queers.
Yes.
And I think what happens in you know, sort of in telling the story, folks are beginning to forget, and I hear it actually quite a bit, side of the mouth, that before the internet, local meant local. You couldn't just log on and find out everything that was happening and come to some sort of overarching narrative about you know, what was happening for folks. You had to actually live there to know, and I think those really local experiences are in danger of getting becoming lost.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. We have historical archives here, and I'm sure I know there's one in New York as well. People trying to preserve that history, but you're right. The local was the local, and we knew our. I always had a feeling. I mean, I wanted, as a writer, I wanted to be in a valley, in a little valley. I wanted my audience to. I wanted to know them by name. And I wanted to write in that way, like a tribal writer or a court writer. I like the local. That's the subject of a lot of my work, and it's for me, it's the ephemeral is really. It's almost like if you capture that, you've really captured something. It's like a nugget that forms its own kind of language.
I'm going to offer you up another quote of yours. This was from an interview actually just a couple of months ago with Eric Sneetham. And you said that you want access to your own experience. You want to wake up. How does that develop in your writing?
If I were into drugs, it would not be the opioids that would be attracting. My goal in life is to wake up. I just want to be as awake as possible to experience. That's really it. That's as simple as that. I think in my writing I'm kind of more waked up than I am in you know, the rest of my life. But it is, that's always been the direction for me. I guess another way of saying that is I want to see the present, which is complicated. Present is something that hasn't been put into words yet, so that's always something that's been a preoccupation of mine.
In the sense of trying to form a method of doing it, or in the sense that it's always moving, the present is always moving away?
Well, both. It's always arriving. It's always moving away. It's something that never existed before. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically.
I think
so. It needs its own language. It needs its own forms of writing to capture it.
To go back a few minutes, Robert, when you say that the sort of the paradigm for how we experience ourselves in the world is changing, we might be between large cultural conceptions of what self is. Can you just give me sort of a very brief primer on what where do you see that? Where are you locating those, that shift or that that lack of clarity?
Well, it wouldn't be an actual thing unless it went from the most intimate parts of our life to the largest cultural and political forms. So it may not have been it may not have made everyone happy, but I think at certain points, we need to talk about our country. At a certain point, we seem to know what our direction was. Now we're just floundering, and discourse is corrupt. But I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
No, I suppose not.
And so something is changing. There are also ways that people are not putting up with things in new ways, in mm-hmm. new fashions. And so that's changing too. Sexism is, men are being made to
rethink
rethink what's acceptable.
Yeah.
What is acceptable behavior? And that kind of thing goes from the most intimate behavior inside of somebody's domestic life to mm-hmm. large political statements.
Yeah.
But that's one example.
Robert,
there's shifts that are where people's sense of themselves and who they are and what they're entitled to and what their expectations, their life expectations, they're shifting. They're shifting quickly.
Robert, I want to thank you for joining us. Here on Preference, we're looking forward to hearing what you bring to us this Saturday, Ford Food and Drink, beginning at 7 p.m. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Kathy Kelly, co-founder of Voices for Creative Nonviolence, on Thursday, September